Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Off the Post. I'm Russ Cohen. We've got Anthony Mangione. Ant, how are you?
Good. Doing well, Russ. Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you, too, and to everybody out there. I just wanted to take a quick moment. Everybody knew I was out there at the Winter Classic, and I covered the Women's Outdoor Classic. And, you know, that injury to Dana Lang, you know, it was so fast. Like, we barely – I didn't even see it, and there was no replay. And now we've, you know, heard that she's got a spinal injury and can't feel her legs. I just want to let everybody know, if you have any way of donating a dollar or – $2, or I donated 20, and the show I was on donated a couple hundred. Whatever you could, you can go to denalang.org, L-A-I-N-G. It would really help, because no matter what kind of coverage you have, it could never cover something like this. So I just wanted to mention that.
Yeah, it's just terrible just to hear that. I mean, we knew that we started getting the feeling here that, you know, as things were going along, that that this is pretty serious, and now we know just how serious, and it's just terrible, terrible news.
Yeah, but we want to move on. We've got a special guest on, Matt Barnaby, former NHLer, also on NHL Network Radio. I've been on his show. He does a great job, and really has dug in with the prospect talk. I really appreciate that, and appreciate his work. Matt, how are you?
I'm good, guys. How are you guys doing tonight?
Awesome.
Doing great.
So let's talk a little World Junior recap from the U.S. perspective, not to bitch about the roster. I've done enough about that. But just from the Ron Wilson standpoint, the quote before the Russian game, the quote after the game where he basically had to stop himself from saying, yeah, I was glad the players finally showed up, that kind of stuff, to the quote afterwards which said, yeah, I'm not going to do this ever again. I'm going to be on the golf course unless you want to hire me in the NHL. To me, it makes me ill when there's a coach like that coaching for Team USA, because I always feel like you should get a coach that wants to at least do it for 2 or 3 years to try and build something. A bronze medal is good, don't get me wrong, but I think Chris Chelios did all the hard work. But, you know, what's your thought on it?
Yeah, I mean, we'll start bitching about next year's roster probably tomorrow, and we'll start putting together our rosters for U.S. Obviously, a few omissions that I think all of us would have liked to have seen, but that's here nor there. I totally agree with you, and I think when you look at it, you know, a bronze medal is great, and from all accounts, the players that played in the tournament had a great time and enjoyed the experience playing for Wilson, but just the comments were nonsense. It was unnecessary. It looked very arrogant. And you know what? The United States, being from Canada, I live in the States. I'm a proud, not American yet, but I am a visa holder. I've lived here for a lot of years, and I feel privileged to live in the States. But we always deal living in the States that a lot of people think that Americans are arrogant. And I think it's because of guys like Ron Wilson. When you look at those comments, You want it's a privilege to – I never had the opportunity to play for Team Canada. I've known many of players that have played for Team Canada, played for the States and other countries, and it's always been a privilege. He almost made it seem like a chore. And the comments of you know, never wanting to do it again, and the comments on I've never seen Russia play and I don't care about their team, and I mean – It's a big deal. It's my favorite tournament of the year. I watch hockey every single night. I watch 10 games. I'm watching Buffalo-Chicago as we speak tonight. And I love the game. I love the tournament. And I just think that he made a mockery out of something that is very special to a lot of people. So I didn't appreciate the comments. I thought they were stupid, dumb, whichever ones we want to go with. If I can go even deeper than that, it would. But uncalled for, I guess, is the easiest way of putting it.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Matt, I know before as the tournament was going on, I know you initially sort of – one of the first moments where we had interaction with one another was about some of the players that you were ranking going into the tournament and sort of talking about how, you know, Puljujarvi and Lane looked. And, of course, you had Jacob Chychrun, of course, ranked third. After seeing their performances, have you sort of adjusted rankings, or are you pretty much at where you were even before the tournament?
You know what? I talk about this all the time. I don't like punishing people for not being there. And Jacob Chychrun, whether he should have been there or shouldn't have been there, he's going to have his chance to play in the tournament. I don't think he's NHL ready next year, even after he closes this year with Sarnia. I had him at three. Watching Lion A play, Austin Matthews, to me, solidified his number one spot. I don't think he will lose that. I think he was terrific all tournament long. He shows that explosiveness as a number one center. He's got all the boxes really checked off. High hockey IQ. He's really big. He skates really well. He uses players around him, makes them better. So I think he solidified himself as the number one. I've coached against Chiarvi for a lot of years, being a 98 birth year and my son being a 98. I know a lot of these guys, so he just keeps getting better and better. It's not like his ceiling has stopped when he was 14 playing in the World Selects Invite or when we went over to Sweden. He just keeps getting better, and he's always been big. He's always been strong. He can always shoot the puck. But watching the tournament, Lionel, when and I'm sure it'll be Lane by the time he gets to Canada, where he stays for a few years, will be changing his name to make it easier to pronounce. To me, he moved up into that top three. Tkachuk, probably watching him, knowing his dad, a lot of similarities in their game. I'd probably move him to four, and out of no fault of his own, Chychrun to me would probably be at number five now. And again, it's hard to punish a guy for not being there, not being able to play on that stage. Just watching the other guys play at that stage, watch and see what they can do against the elite of the elite, really impressed me, and for the short term has certainly moved them up.
Yeah, right now I can't really disagree with you. I like Lane a little better than Pajarvi. Can't even tell you why, other than the power part of his game, even though they both have it. And Pajarvi definitely is a better passer, but it's really splitting hairs. But I do agree with you the way those guys have sort of placed out. But it was a great tournament. We'll move on from that. Let's talk a little bit about some of the trades. What was the the one trade maybe in your mind that really caught your fancy, just by basically not being just maybe just a salary dump, but just from the players involved? What were some of the fun ones for you?
Well, I think when you look at the Johansson trade for Seth Jones, it's something that when you watch a lot of games, you see the need for a lot of teams if they're going to get to that next level. And watching Nashville, I've liked them the last 2 years, especially under Peter Laviolette, the way that they've really change the way, the style of game that they play, more of an up-tempo offense, forecheck, 2-1-2 most of the times, and really put pressure. Now, they didn't have the horses to be able to do it, and to be successful in this league, I think you can't just win with defense alone. I think it's an essential part of the game. You need to be able to play defense. You need to be able to play 2-1. But to win in the Western Conference against some of these LAs and against Chicago Blackhawks, you're going to have to score some goals tonight. It hurt them last year when they played Chicago, and one of the big reasons they lost out is that they couldn't keep up with the Joneses when it came to scoring goals against Chicago. So Johansson feels a need for them. Obviously, they had a very tough relationship. The ongoing feud or whatever it may have been between him and Tortorella, being sat out, a big-time player, you knew something was going to happen at some point from Columbus's point of view. I think it's a great fit in Nashville. He's got a goal and assist in his first two periods in Nashville tonight, so it seems like that's going to be a marriage that lasts a long time. But it's always surprising when you're a young kid, your number one center, David Poile's never had a number one center, and he finally gets that guy. Now, to go the other way, you got to give up something to get something. And to me, Seth Jones is going to be a stud. He's going to be a number one defenseman. It's hard to find. And we marvel at the World Junior Championships how good Zach Werenski was. In my opinion, Zach Werenski is never going to be a Seth Jones. He's going to be a very good player.
I agree.
He's going to be a dynamite, probably one or two. But with Seth Jones, you just don't see, watching a lot of youth hockey and 16, 17, 18-year-olds that are 6'4", 215 pounds, skate great, have good hockey sense, and a bomb of a shot. So I think they hit a home run in Columbus. Getting a guy like Seth Jones that when you have a disgruntled player in Johansson, usually the return isn't as quite as good as you're going to get. Usually it's a package of players. This was one-for-one hockey trade in the era where we don't have a lot of hockey trades, so I really like the trade for both teams.
Now, Ant, I'll give you a moment to respond. The one thing I really liked about this deal, and people know I like Johansson and Seth Jones, it's really a no-brainer, but the guy that really benefits from this trade is Ryan Ellis, because now he's not really trapped behind the other three defensemen, and
yeah,
he already scored a great goal tonight. And
yeah,
I think people were probably, like, forgetting about him, almost like, hey, why do they still have Ryan Ellis? Well, you know, and they forget maybe what a great player he was in junior. So I think that's something that's going to be a big benefit.
Yeah, Ryan Ellis, when he played in Windsor, and we saw the hands and the way that he can maneuver the power play. You know, it's almost like a Ryan Murphy, who I thought would take a bigger step.
Yeah.
But I thought Ryan Murphy would take that next step. He hasn't taken the step like a Ryan Ellis. They had the luxury when you have Shea Weber and Ekholm, and we know Roman Josi is an all-star this year, and Ryan Ellis, they just have a luxury. They had a plethora of defensemen that they could make this deal. So it really made sense for them to go out and get that number one center. Not a lot of teams could pull off what Nashville was able to do. But when you get to jump down to the number four spot and you pick up a Seth Jones, and I'm sure David Poile was happy as a pig, and you know what, when he fell to number four. So it turned out, like you said, to be a great deal for both teams.
We're certainly talking about a one-for-one rare hockey trade. Another deal, certainly one that was interested here in Philadelphia. There's been a lot of Ron Hextall's been working pretty diligently in terms of trying to alleviate the Flyers' salary cap situation from some of the deals that they've had. And of course, yesterday we had Vinny LeCavalier and Luke Shen getting moved to the LA Kings. What were some of your views on both ends of that deal, Matt?
Yeah, I was puzzled when I first saw it on LA's point of view, and then about half an hour on Twitter, everything we find out through Twitter. Right? I'm sure my kids are going to get married, and I'm gonna find out on Twitter. It's not going to be a phone call or a text. It's going to be, hey, Dad, just want you to know we're getting married. So, you know, the deal came down that Philly is still going to pick up 50% of the contract for both those players. Now, Shen is up at the end of the year. LeCavalier had two more years on the deal. He has agreed to retire. I don't know if there's a form you sign for that or how it goes above, or you just take someone's word. But if that is true, and it looks like it is, then it ends up being, a better deal for LA. I didn't understand it when it first came out. Now that it seems like it's only a one-year thing and really they're rentals, it makes more sense. I still had some reservations, I guess, about both the players. I played with Vinny LeCavalier. I know how much of a stud he was for the time that he's played. It's not the same Vinny LeCavalier. So I tuned in last night to watch. The fit was better than I thought. The fit on the fourth line was better than I thought. And one thing Vinny still has is great hockey sense. He's a great passer. He's not going to get mesmerized or be nervous in situations in the playoffs. And this is a big, heavy team. I mean, they're as big and heavy a hockey team as I've seen in the National Hockey League. So they just added more size to this team with Luke Shen, who I thought struggled for most of the game yesterday. I thought Vinny played pretty darn well for having flown across country and playing in a game. But time will tell. We'll have to. It's an awful expensive experiment, even though there's only half the year left and Philly's still picking up half the tab. It's still an expensive experiment, you know, when you can go into February 29th and maybe pick up someone to help you. But I hope for Vinny, I hope for Luke Shen, he's able to revive his career. Didn't work out for either of them in Philadelphia, but they seemed to work in their first game against Toronto last night, which I was very impressed with.
The part of the deal I like is Philly getting Jordan Wheel. We've had Michael Fuder on our show many times and Mark Iannetti, and they've always talked up Wheel, but I've watched him play quite a bit, and he was just a guy that just it took a little while because he needed to sort of get fast enough and strong enough. He was always smart enough, and he always had good hands, and Philly's the kind of team that has a lot of spots still up for grabs. I mean, there's some spots being sort of temporarily held, and maybe Wheel would have to play a little wing, and maybe he'll play center to start, and maybe he'll have to wait for an injury. But I think there's some real opportunity for him there, and I think because Lombardi knows Hextall so well, Lombardi really did the right thing for this player, because there was no way he was going to crack that lineup for the Kings in the next year or two. And at 23, you know, the clock's ticking. So I really kind of like what they did for the kid.
Yeah, you like to give kids a chance that have been loyal and worked hard, and all the counts and phone calls and texts that I've received, that he is that guy. I think he was the MVP in the Calder Cup
as well.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard nothing but good things. He was a big scorer in Regina, and he's done everything really that's been asked of him. But sometimes you're pigeonholed into organizations that just don't need you, and it's better to get that chance to play in other organizations. If you want to bring up a name, Patrick Sharp in Philadelphia never got that chance. So, you know, I remember the day that he came over in the Matt Allison trade to Chicago, and I looked at Dale Talon, and I said, I'd like to see all my fingers, because I feel like you're stealing one from me, like you just stole from Philly, because this guy's a stud. And sure enough, Patrick Sharp has had a pretty darn good career, and hopefully for this kid, he's able to find a spot in the lineup. He's not going to play there this year, I don't think. I don't think he'll get that opportunity. It's a chance to go down. But next year, when they have a lot of good defensemen ready to make that step in the coming years, hopefully he makes his mark. As this team, I don't think, is a playoff team yet. If they do, they'll slip in. But they certainly, like you said, have a lot of holes to fill in the coming years.
They do, and I'll tell you, Anthony and I covered Sharp in the AHL, and really the reason he got traded was because Ken Hitchcock just didn't think he was a fit in the system, and that was a big break for Chicago, though. You're right about that.
I'm sure Hitchcock would take him right now because he's looking for a scorer. So I don't think Jim Nill is going to give him up, though, right now.
No, and actually, you know, we lost Anthony there for a minute. He's coming back on now. We should probably talk about Jim Nill for a minute and that extension he got, because so deserved. The best story I can give about Jim Nill, he used to come on our XM show a lot, and right around draft time he came on one time, and I used to ask him, how could he be so good at the draft and be so diligent with these guys and have all the scouting? And he said he would literally, weeks leading up to the draft, he could be mowing the lawn and have a thought about a player or two and have to, like, turn off the lawnmower and go in the house and make a couple phone calls and call the scouts and make sure about a guy, make sure where they have him ranked, and then go back out and finish mowing the lawn.
Well, I'm glad he turned the mower off, because it would have been expensive on gas, and he might have cut a toe off if he kept on doing it and tried to make the phone calls at the same time. Trust me, it would have happened to me if I would have tried to do it. But when you talk about Jim Nill, there's a reason why everyone wanted to talk to him when he was a Detroit Red Wing, and they wanted to pry him away. They knew what they had in Detroit. We had him on the other day on our show, and he said it all goes back to scouting. He goes, all we really are as GMs are glorified scouts. And it really is. That's the business. It's the lifeline of the National Hockey League, and for GMs is the scouting. Who can you find? What diamond in the rough? What stud can you find when it's your time and not make that mistake? And he's shown time and time again to make the right choice at the right time, let the right guy go. I mean, I thought he was absolutely nuts going and spending $10.4 million this year on goaltending to go get Niemi. But he felt that the one guy couldn't carry the load on that team. No one was going to take Lettinen's contract, so the easiest thing was to do was go get a countryman, a friend, and someone that they could do it as to, and it's proved to be brilliant. He's got some stars, and obviously when you add a guy like Tyler Seguin to the mix, and you already have Ben in there, you get Sharp, now you add Oduya, a Stanley Cup winner. This team's set for the long haul. I don't envision anyone winning the Executive of the Year except for Jim Nill.
Matt, another situation I certainly wanted to ask you about was what's going on in Tampa with Jonathan Drouin. Number one, do you think this is going to be, in terms of with some of the younger players now, even within entry-level deals, do you think we're going to potentially see situations like this more and more as we go along, or do you think this is a unique situation with Drouin?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think it's a unique situation, I should say. See, I'm trying to mow my lawn at the same time and answer the question here in the middle of Buffalo, in the middle of winter. But I think it's a unique situation. I really, you know, he's a high pick. I think he looks around and he sees Barkov thriving with Yager, and he looks at McKinnon thriving in Colorado, and now Seth Jones. I mean, I just think for a young kid, his expectations, having met him last year, he thinks he's great. He has a full of confidence, and he wants to prove everyone that he can play. He's not getting that opportunity. He's on a team where he's not in the top six. They're deep offensively. They aren't playing like it, but they're deep offensively. And he hasn't gained the trust of John Cooper there. So I think it's a unique situation. I think in today's day and age, there's a little bit more of a chance than in my era when I played. We were a little bit more fearful. These guys are have a little bit more bravado, and there's a lot more money I think he wants to get and be the man right now. At the same time, he goes down to Syracuse. He scores two goals in his first period playing in the AHL for the Syracuse Crunch. So he's going down. He's not like he's holding out. He just wants to play hockey. He wants to be counted on. He wants to get the ice time. I can understand that. I really think that he should maybe be quiet a little bit, just play down in the AHL. I think they're going to move him. I really do, and they better get a good return. But I think they're going to move Jonathan Drouin. I'm sure 2019 has called in Jonathan Drouin. The price is going to be steep. But I think at some point here, Jonathan Drouin will get moved because you're not going to force Steve Yzerman's hand. But at the same time, I don't know if that relationship can be repaired. We've seen it with Marty St. Louis in that organization. We've seen it with, I'm not going to say we've seen it with Steven Stamkos, but it's still up in the air. And now with Jonathan Drouin, something's going on there that just isn't right, and I don't have a finger on it. But certainly three of your star players in about a two-year span isn't a good thing to be going through.
Here's what I could say about Drouin. I mean, I watched him a lot in juniors. I've interviewed him every time he's come through town at the draft, a lot of different times, and I've never really thought of him as cocky or entitled. I know I've read a little bit about that in different places. But, you know, when he was playing with early in the year, like preseason, you know, he was lighting it up in preseason. And when he was playing with Stamkos on the top line, he had 6 points in five games. And then he went dead for seven or eight games. And then he got moved off. And before you know it, he's not playing. And the thing about it is, when you do that to a kid like that, that has that kind of ability, that really does mess with his head. And then if you all of a sudden have him come back and say, well, you've got to prove it and do it the right way and work on the fourth lineup, some guys just aren't made that way. I mean, it's just, it's a tough thing, and I keep hearing everybody saying, well, do it the right way, go down in the AHL. But he might have 15 points in 10 games, and then what is that really proving for anybody? You know, that's where the real argument lies, I guess.
What that's going to do, and really Tampa's in a no lose situation in that point of view. If he goes down and stinks it up down there, they're like, see, I told you so. You're not ready for it. You're not ready for big time. If he goes down and he lights it up, 15 points in 10 games, then his trade value goes up and they're able to trade him and get more of a return. So they're in a no lose situation right now because they're the ones holding the gauntlet. They have him by you know what. And until something happens, Steve Yzerman gets what he wants. And from what I'm hearing, it's a very, very steep price. I was asked a few times if one team in the middle of the draft would give up a prospect, a good prospect. I'm even saying an A prospect and their first rounder, and the answer automatically is no. The answer is no to them trading him. So I hope he figures it out. I hope they, in a happy world, I hope he ends up in Tampa. They need him. They need his scoring. They need his ability. We all saw him play in junior, and he was as dominant as anyone else in that draft coming out from an offensive point. And I agree with you in the point that you need to let offensive guys make some mistakes. There's a growing pain in coming through the National Hockey League, and if you get whipped every time you make a mistake, it's hard mentally. This is an offensive player. You can teach anyone to play good defensive hockey. You can't teach anyone to put up points on the board. He can do that.
Matt, interesting, and certainly Russ and I have discussed this, up to and including right up to the break. But Is the Pacific's division struggles one of the biggest surprises to you this year? I mean, you have L.A., and then it's like everybody else in that division is struggling.
I don't even call it the Pacific anymore. It's the Pathetic. So, we don't go with Pacific. Pacific is being way too nice. We go through every day, it seems like, and I change my mind on who's going to make the playoffs because of who wins one game. I'm very surprised. I want to see San Jose finally, like, just get over that hump. And losing Logan Couture for a lot of the year, he's one of their leaders. It certainly hurts. They came out to a start. Martin Jones has not played as well as of late as he did through that spurt through the start of the year. But there's just so much doubt in my mind in watching any of those teams play. And you watch Arizona, they're the ones that probably impress you the most besides in L.A. just because of their youth, and they find a way to battle, and they're coached by the best coach that I ever had in the National Hockey League, Dave Tippett. But it's one of those things that I don't think we wanted as fans and people that cover the game, is to see people that or teams that are going to have more points than the third place team in the Pacific or Pathetic Division,
yeah,
and still make it. That's tough. I'm a New York Jets fan. And I'm pissed as all because my team is 10-5 or 10-6 and not in the playoffs. And there's
all
two
right,
that,
well, here we go,
that
Matt,
have worse records. So
we're getting ready to end the show, but you and I are Jet fans, and I was going to give you a full minute to just filibuster about the Jets. So go ahead.
Well, I hated Rex Ryan as the coach of the New York Jets. He talked
me
way
too
much, and we finally put ourselves in a great position. A great
mm-hmm.
position, and we lose to Rex Ryan. Like,
yep.
I'm a Canadian that hates the CFL, and I love the NFL. I love my New York Jets, and I get knocked out by Rex Ryan living in Buffalo. How hard do you think that is? That's worse than the Pathetic Division. That's really bad stuff. I'd rather have done my lawn today and cut my toe off. That's as far as I want to go.
All right. Matt, we really appreciate you coming on. Everybody should listen to him on NHL Network Radio. He's great with Steve Coulias. And thanks so much for coming on. I really appreciate it.
No problem, guys. Happy New Year. Anytime you need
me,
and keep up the great work.
Thanks a lot for coming on, Matt. Appreciate it.
All right, yeah, we got a couple of minutes left. But if you want, I will
yes,
give
sir.
You a minute to filibuster about your Philadelphia Eagles, if you'd like.
Oh, God. Russ, we don't have enough time. We really,
okay.
really don't right now. It's turned into absolute. Oh God! Which coach? Which new coach are we going to select this year? Oh, we don't know. Who's got the most emotional? You know, and the owner drives me up a wall. Oh my God! It's like it anymore with Jeffrey Lurie. It's like what sounds good for the moment, and it's like we're going to talk about
Let
emotional
me call Andy
intelligence
Reed.
Now. Let me call Andy Reid and see what – you really have to – Matt, why did you go there, Russ?
Well, you didn't get a chance to say it, and maybe we'll go a minute or two into overtime. But as
mm-hmm.
far as the Jordan Wheel component to the Flyers trade,
yeah.
do you agree with me that you think that there's some upside there? What do you think?
I think there is because, and again, I look at it from the point of view of Wheels again, and you mentioned it as well, the opportunity, and Matt also mentioned that as well, for a player
yeah.
who's sort of, he's maxed out at the AHL level. He's done a really good job. He won the Butterfield Award. He's done pretty much everything you could do at the
yeah.
A. The question is going to be, is he a quadruple A player where he's just a dominant player down at that level? And when he gets to the NHL level, again, we haven't. Again, LA has brought him up with the whole waiver exemption. They had to keep him up, didn't play him. I think he's a player. Certainly, you know, he's going to have all the motivation in the world to really finally have an opportunity to take a bite out here. And again, there's some talk obviously about his size, but I think everything else that I looked at with regards to his, you know, what he brings, can be really, really, really beneficial for the Flyers. I think. You know, people have images of him as a top six guy. You know, I think
no.
they probably need to cool down on that. I think as
yeah.
but as a potential high skill bottom six guy that they can have. And again, the other thing that I mentioned to you, and we've had this discussion before, is the fact that this puts a little bit of heat on Matt. You know, as good a possession player as Matt Reed may be, he himself has stated the fact that his play had gotten a little bit complacent. Having a guy like
yeah.
Wheel there. is going to put the really sort of, you know, put the onus on Matt Reed to really start to kick things into gear, because if Wheel starts really, you know, doing a good job, the Flyers could put, I could very well see the Flyers shopping Reed here, towards the, you know, as we get closer to the deadline, or even potentially into the offseason if that happens. So he's got competition here. Again, good. I think his speed has gotten to the point where he's definitely an NHL. I think he's got NHL, you know, level speed. Good hands, good head, and again, he's gonna get an opportunity. So, again, my expectations aren't incredibly high, but if he can be a productive third or fourth line player for the Flyers, that's something they really, really need.
Well, I got to tell you, before we go off the air, I've seen something now that I never thought I was going to see. Looks like Ryan Kesler put a big hit on Yuri Laterra for St. Louis while St. Louis was on the power play, and Vladimir Tarasenko came to his aid and fought Kesler. You got to remember, while they're on the power play.
Wow.
And Tarasenko got a little bit bloodied, and he was looking up, smiling at the scoreboard, and I'm telling you, I just love this guy because he is all business, all about it being a teammate with heart. If anybody has, like, that Russian stigma, they want to put that stereotype, break every stereotype.
Nah, he's a tough boy, and we've seen him. He's strong. He's just bull strong. He plays a finesse game by definition in terms of how he does it. But if he wants to really sort of physically, we saw when he played here against the Flyers, one play where, I mean, granted, again, mentioning Matt Reed again, Matt Reed bounced off him like he was a normal human against Superman, you know, trying to run at him. It was almost comical that one play that turned into a goal. Now he's such a fun player to watch. There's so many teams in it, you know, that, you know, whatever stigma that you have about, you know, Russian hockey players in this case. At this point now, if you still have those stigmas, it's kind of like, it's true of any player anymore, wherever you're at in the world. But again, they still have that. It's still stuck to Russian players in this case, and I don't agree with it. But Tarasenko, if you do have any of those things in your head, just watch Vladimir Tarasenko play, and you'll disabuse yourself of that notion pretty darn fast.
Yeah, we're going to end the show, but one of our listeners, Mike from Buffalo, suggested the Eagles should get Doug Marone as the coach.
Wait a minute, did the audiologist say that?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Do you have a retort for that?
I have a retort? Yeah, okay. You tell him to enjoy some more Rex Ryan.
And that's where we're going to leave it. Thanks, everybody, for listening to Off the Post. We'll catch everybody next time.
Take care, everybody.